Welcome to the Modern Enterprise Podcast. This is a podcast tailored for enterprise IT leaders and decision makers wanting to transform their organization into a more modern and agile enterprise where software drives the innovation. This podcast is hosted by Krish Subramanian, founder and chief research analyst of Risha.Research, a research firm focused on modern IT stacks and artificial intelligence. In this podcast, we will talk about the trends reshaping the IT landscape that falls in line with the modern enterprise framework, advocated by Risha.Research. For more information on our research, please visit www.risha.com. You can read our research articles at www.stacksense.io. We are reinventing industry research for the data-driven world by opening up our data and research process through GitHub. We encourage you to join us in our research by starting our repos or doing a pull request whenever appropriate. This will get your voices heard in our research process. You can find out repos at www.github.com/stacksense.io. You can also watch our videos and webinar recordings at www.risha.tv. Please subscribe to this podcast at anchor.fm/modern enterprise. Let us now move on to today's show.
In today's episode, we will be talking with Brian Platts, founder and CEO of Flurie, F-L-U-R-E-E. It's a blockchain-based database company. Brian, why can't you introduce yourself, talk about your company, and we'll go from there.
Okay, great. So I co-founded Flurie along with my good friend and about a business partner of about two decades now, Flip Filipowski. And we started this business about 4 years ago. Our background and focus has always been on enterprise software. So, of course, what we built can be used in a lot of spaces, but kind of the needs and requirements around enterprises is what primarily drives us and where most of our experience is. And we really wanted to find a way to look at a better foundation for enterprise apps that we're building. And we were both, and particularly Flip, very involved in the kind of blockchain and crypto space, 6 or so years ago. And so it's very natural that some of those concepts and benefits of blockchain kind of seeped into our thinking. And what we've come up with for our initial product is a blockchain database, a configurable database like, you know, a MySQL and or Oracle or a MongoDB that can power any application, but merging in the benefits that blockchain comes with it. So we just launched that product live. We've had it in beta for some time. And so we're kind of early in this journey, but we're so far really excited about it.
Awesome. Congratulations on launching your product. And let's first deconstruct some of the hype around blockchain. Because the blockchain, in my personal opinion, blockchain has got a lot of negative press because of the issues around Bitcoin and some of the black market that came along with that. But I think blockchain as a protocol has a lot of value for enterprise customers and across multiple verticals. Like trust is the underlying factor in all our business, so blockchain fits very well there. And can you talk a little bit about where blockchain as a enterprise centric tool or protocol is applicable, and where it is not actually applicable? Sort of like, probably like bring down the hype and sort of talk in more realistic terms.
Yeah, sure. So the we see blockchain being employed with one particular use case right now quite a bit. And so a lot of the hype, a lot of the excitement, a lot of the controversy is around that particular use case of using this technology. And it's really around transactions, facilitating transactions. In blockchain technology, which it came out of that world, so it makes a lot of sense, it is an incredible tool for facilitating trustless transactions, whether it is a currency like Bitcoin or whether it is something that's tracking assets or shares of stock, moving ownership from person A to person B or entity A to entity B. It's a pretty straightforward use case. It's almost everything we see being used out there right now. And it's a fantastic category to deploy this technology. But blockchain and distributed ledger as a whole is a, it's a tool, an underlining tool. I hate bringing the analogy to the internet because a lot of people do it, but it's kind of like the internet is this tool. And depending on who you're talking and how you're applying it, it might be the foundation of creating what's now the largest e-commerce company in the world. It might be the foundation of enabling cloud computing, which is how we're running our data centers now. Or it might be, you know, the replacement of the world's encyclopedia like Wikidata. It's an underlying toolkit that makes all these very, very different things possible. So a lot of our focus with Flurry in particular is around using blockchain technology to bring integrity and trust to data. So it's a little bit different use case than like the cryptocurrency side or the transactional side of this, but it's an area that we think ultimately is going to have a massive amount of benefit. But yeah, I think when you talk to people about blockchain and they've heard X or Y or whatever it is, sometimes it's useful to understand the window they're looking at the technology through, because it's going to be different for different people. They're going to have different perspectives around it. And then for those people, the key is to just keep in mind this is an underlying technology that's going to make lots of different types of things possible. It's not just the thing that enabled the, you know, black market to exist with Bitcoin. There's a lot of other things going on.
So can we look at blockchain as what TCP/IP served for internet? Like probably blockchain is that that protocol that's going to bring in a trust-based network for everything from e-commerce to even social interactions to everything. Like can we see blockchain to be an equivalent of that for the web 5.0 or 6.0, whatever term these pundits want to use. Can we look at it that way?
I think so. And, you know, just a question ago, you asked me to sort of break down the hype, but here is, I guess, where I hype it up even more. I think it is a fundamental building block of how we are going to build applications in the future. And, you know, like the internet, we don't even think about it, but we are probably all using the internet hundreds, if not thousands of times a day. And we don't realize it. It's just now infected in everything. Blockchain is going to be the same way. You're not even going to know that you're using blockchain hundreds or thousands of times a day. It is just going to be there. And right now, especially I think people in the blockchain space, consultants in the blockchain space, they kind of see it as this like sidecar to their enterprise application or whatever they're building. It's this thing that sits off to the side and you've got to kind of integrate with it and things. And it isn't that different than how we viewed the internet early on. It was like this thing you bolted on to the applications you were already running or building. And over time that changed. And I think, you know, right around here, and certainly we're big ones pushing for this, the change is that it's not this thing sitting on its side. It's this thing that is just embedded in part of the internals of how things work. And so, yeah, we think we're going to see this everywhere and it is going to be pervasive.
I think I agree with you on that. Like one of the things that came to my mind, or which I've been talking about since the early days of blockchain, is it's not about the distributed storage that matters. It's about the trust that comes along with it. Especially, I thought probably large banks will be interested in blockchain, not for storing their data on the garage of people, but for using blockchain as a way to ensure integrity, ensure trust. So I would say we need that kind of an evolution to make blockchain more widely acceptable. What is your take on that? Do you think the way blockchain distributes storage across multiple nodes across the globe that matters much, or it's about ensuring the integrity by sort of like keeping track of what is happening that matters much? In that case, do you expect financial institutions like banks to use blockchain to sort of add a layer of trust or add a layer of integrity for transactions their customers use? What is your take on that?
Yeah, I think it's all about bringing trust to the data and the information. And I, you know, I'm a technologist by heart and I do a lot of coding. And so it's easy for me to start talking about nodes and distribution and all these sorts of things, but why are we doing all this? Ultimately, it boils up to so that we actually have an information base that we can genuinely trust. And therefore, we don't need to trust the people giving us that information, or we don't need to trust the circumstances around that information. We can trust the integrity of the information itself. And when you start to think about this, you start to realize just how vulnerable all of the information we rely on is. And then you take it a step further. Like, I won't take it a step further yet, but like, you don't know if someone in your data center changed data. You don't know where a particular record sitting in a database, maybe related to an invoice, an employee record, or a financial statement. You can't really prove who put that there. It could have been someone in the data center. You might have been hacked and you didn't know it, and someone externally modified your database records. Or, you know, oftentimes our apps are trying to secure the information at the perimeter, and you need to go all the way into the code of your app to figure out, well, who might have actually had access to update this piece of information. We have surprisingly little integrity about the data we rely on. And I think once you get to that point, you start to see where we're spending so much money because we don't trust the data. And in fact, I argue a huge component of the entire auditing industry is because we don't trust the data. We hire auditors, even though we're giving them, you know, dumps of our financial records or dumps of data X, Y, or Z. But the reason we pay them is because the people who want to consume and understand what that information is, they don't trust it. So we have to pay auditors that go and sort of check around the perimeter and make sure everything seems like it has integrity. That whole industry exists because we don't trust the data. So much of what we do exists because we don't actually trust the data. And I think when you get down to the root of it and you can truly trust the information as opposed to the party giving it to you, it starts to change a lot of things.
Absolutely. My follow-up question to that, yes, I agree that blockchain serves as that tool that could bring in transparency and trust to the process. Does it compromise on the privacy as in like the fact that the record of my interaction with another person is stored across so many nodes? Does it sort of make me put my privacy at risk than say, let's say if I have the data on my computer, I just erase it and it's gone. So I'm confident that I can be sure about my privacy. But if the track of my data is sort of like spread out around the distributed nodes, does it impact the idea of privacy? Or if it does, how can one make sure that when using something like the blockchain-based storage, they can still maintain the level of privacy they are used to in keeping it on a single node or like keeping a single copy of their data? Does it make sense?
Yes, it does. And I think it's a really interesting question, one that we get hung up on, I think for good reason. The whole back, you know, underlying componentry of blockchain and how it proves the data integrity is by having a complete historical record of all of the data changes that have ever happened, and which makes it hard for us to delete things or delete them permanently. So there's a few ways around this. You know, one thing is I would argue it's harder to delete a lot of data than you think it is anyhow. We have backups, we have historical archives of data dumps of our databases, et cetera, that are all sitting out there that all have copies of information that might not be running on the current version of the database, but they're still there. It's still there for a long time. And anyone dealing with these privacy issues kind of realizes that these artifacts exist everywhere. So it's already a problem. It's not something that we have that blockchain makes immensely harder than the already hard problem that we're dealing with. There's a few approaches to it. One is that if you're truly decentralizing your blockchain network, and we can get into more of that if you want, but you can get a lot, you know, we talk about trust of data. Trust has a lot of dimensions to it. Some of those dimensions are increased by decentralization. Some of them you can actually achieve without decentralization. It's just how you structure and manage your information that can bring trust to it. even if you're not shipping your data elsewhere. But assuming you're shipping your data elsewhere, there's no good way of getting around the fact that people are going to see this information. There's some technologies that have some niche applications like zero-knowledge proofs that can kind of obscure or hide data. But you know, if you're looking for something general purpose that's going to power a database or something like that, then it's a very difficult characteristic to achieve. So our focus is, let's bring some of the privacy information in on the side and have a query interface to our data that can seamlessly join different data sources together as though they're the same database. So we spend a lot of time with you know, some of the technologies that are the foundation of the semantic web, you know, the Sparkle query interface and RDF. That's actually how we export data out, as RDF-like information. And the whole idea of this stuff is that you can have, potentially in the context of blockchain, you can have data that is maybe managing customer or personal information, but has zero personally identifiable information attached to it, just some identifier. The PII data, I can store somewhere else. I'm storing it locally, or I'm providing it at runtime to my app, or however I want to store it, that I feel like I can delete it and destroy it instantly if I need to. And then if you focus on the query side, what you're doing is you're actually bringing these data sources together dynamically as though they're part of the same database. So your apps still work just like you'd expect them to work. They can just issue normal queries. You've isolated your personally identifiable information in a place you actually can delete it permanently. And you can still get the benefits of blockchain for the data that does end up needing some of the decentralization. So I think we can have our cake and eat it too, to a certain degree on this.
Got it. So before we dig deeper on Flurry database, one question is about, what do you see in terms of trends regarding the user experience part of blockchain? Because in the early days of blockchain, the biggest obstacle I heard from both normal users of applications using blockchain as well as developers wanting to sort of develop their applications using blockchain was about user experience or developer experience. Has it changed? What are the things that are reshaping the trends in the direction, making user experience seamless for the developers wanting to develop apps, or even users wanting to use blockchain as a backend for their application?
Yeah, well, I think it's starting to change. I mean, you know, you're talking to someone with a biased opinion, obviously, because that's one of the big purposes of FlurryDB, is to actually embed the capabilities and the technology that you're already used to using, so you don't need to necessarily learn or stitch together things. But we are early, so the tooling has a long way of maturing. The user experience, I mean, part of our concern is on the end users. Blockchains work by guaranteeing the provenance, the source of information changes. And we do that typically with public-private key cryptography. But we have a big user experience issue, not as much on the developer side, but on the end user side, that now all of a sudden you've got these like regular people, you know, people use social media and Twitter, but now they need to do like private public key cryptography. And so there's a lot of tools that are making that easy. One of the things that we have done is we've built in this notion of authorities, basically where users can delegate to authorities that can sign transactions or changes on their behalf. And that way you can use the things we're used to using if you want, like a username password to get into an application, but we're still using blockchain in the very back end of this. So I think there's techniques and different things we can do to aid the user experience. Again, my focus is a little bit more on being worried about the true end user experience. That's where we're really going to get adoption and have adoption drive for blockchain use. Certainly developer experience is still quite raw, but we're getting new tools, we're getting better tools, better technologies, and I'm pretty confident in the developer experience that it's going to continue to improve at a pretty rapid pace.
Okay, let's sort of like now talk about FluoryDB for a little bit. So assume that you're talking to a CIO or an enterprise decision maker. What will be your pitch for FluoryDB?
Yes, so there's kind of two sides of what we do with information. And I would skip over the whole part that information drives everything we do in every application you've ever used. So we all know we need it. We all know it's immensely valuable, and we'd be nowhere without it. So what can we do better around it? So these two aspects, one is bringing trust and integrity to the information that you're using. And like I started out with, we have surprisingly little integrity about the data. We don't know where the changes came from, how they happened, when they happened, by whom they happened. We just trust that hopefully our apps had the right security, or our firewalls worked, or no one in IT is messing around with stuff, that the data is accurate, but we really don't know. So anywhere where you feel data integrity and trust is important, it's, you know, you should be doing something about it. And blockchain, and in particular FluoryDB, is a great solution to help you solve that problem quickly. The other half of this is, how do we use information? How do we get access to it? How do we make it really useful in our app? And here our focus is in our reference query engine that we pair up with kind of the blockchain transactor with FluoryDB. The query engine is where you issue your queries to, your questions. And we've structured this as a graph, an RDF style, so a name graph style database. And we think graph databases are where people should be thinking about. We think they align beautifully with today's end user applications. They align beautifully with the front end technologies that we're using more and more, like React on the front end. You know, graph style or tree style data is exactly how those applications want information. Things like artificial intelligence, they thrive on these relationships and connection and history, and graph style and other capabilities do that. So our focus is making the query side just a better database for today's times. And most of the database technology that we're using today is stuff that was invented, you know, 30, 40 years ago now. And they were invented around constraints that we don't have today. So there are certain decisions that were made that are still with us to this very day and how we do things. And it's an opportunity to break out. I'll give you one good example of how we make this information super accessible and do things that you're not used to seeing a database do. And that's with what we call time travel. So FluoryDB understands time equally as well as it understands information. So every time you issue a query, it's always actually executing that query as of a moment in time. And you have every moment in time ever from your database instantly available. And importantly, every moment in time is provable. So anytime you issue a query, if you don't specify a moment in time, it'll always do what a default behavior, the only behavior a normal database would do, which is answer based on what it currently knows. But every single query you can put a moment in time on and instantly get back the response of what the result set was for that exact query as of that moment in time. And this leads to really cool stuff, like putting a rewind button on any end user application you build. And being able to do this with no additional development work, right? You can just have the user be sitting on a screen in your UI and say, okay, well, I want to see what the screen looked like, you know, a month and 2.3 seconds ago. And they can actually instantly do that. And FluoryDB enables this. So we're starting to enable a lot more patterns around access to information. And I won't go too far into it unless you want me to, but we even see a way of now starting to extend individual trusted databases and allow queries to happen across all kinds of companies and databases simultaneously and be able to do a lot of very interesting things, more towards the line of the notions of the semantic web.
Awesome. So assume now you're talking to an enterprise developer. How are you going to convince her or him to use FluoryDB instead of the traditional database technologies they are used to, including some of the public cloud services that are available?
Yeah, well, that's a hard one. It's always hard to get people to try new things that they're not used to. we're going to have our best luck if we have a user with an application that falls into some of the things that we can very uniquely do. For example, if data integrity is really critical for their application, then they're going to need a better solution than a traditional database. If they want to use a graph style database, for example, there aren't many very good graph style databases currently available, and most that are available don't support like full atomic database transactions like we do. So that might be a driver for someone to give us a try. If someone's looking to decentralize a database, run a database across multiple companies where no company actually can control or manipulate the data, but everyone has instant visibility, that's pretty cool stuff. I know of no other technology that can do that. So if that's something you're looking to achieve, that would be a reason to use FlurryDB. So there's a lot of these individual things that we very uniquely do, and we think most of our adoption is going to happen around new applications that have one of these characteristics. But ultimately, I think as people get used to the technology, they'll start seeing the benefits. They'll start to scratch their head and figure, you know, why would I ever use a database that I couldn't prove what data was updated when and by whom, or know if it had ever been tampered with? And over time, we'll start to look to use this sort of technology for every application that we build.
Yeah, I could see data governance as a very good use case for FlurryDB kind of a database. And can you talk about some of the enterprise use cases you are seeing with FlurryDB? And also, if you can showcase the value of time travel with some use case, I think that'll be good for people to understand how FlurryDB as well as the time travel feature fits into their need.
Yeah, well, I'll talk a few things about time travel and the idea of an immutable database, because we're not used to having that idea. So a practical example application that we built that showcases this capability is a simple web app. It's a React-based web app that manages shareholder information for companies. So who your shareholders are, employee stock options, vesting schedules, you know, it's these basic things that most companies need to, at least non-public companies need to manage in some sort of tool that they can have. And anyone who started a company or done any of this knows that 99% of companies doing this do it on Excel spreadsheets. They have rounding errors and all kinds of stuff going on in those. They're emailing them to people. And then inevitably you email another, you know, shareholder report to some investor and they look at it and their percentage is, you know, 0.1% different. And you're trying to figure out why. And this is the problem with not having time travel capability, not having data integrity. So what we have done in our particular application is that we've done what I described before. We put a, right in the header, there's a rewind button, a time travel button, that an end user can go to any screen, whether it's a screen summarizing data or a screen just listing out pieces of information, it doesn't matter, because again, any query you could issue at any point in time with FlurryDB. And using the one widget, you can rewind every single screen and see exactly what happened. Provable, exactly what that data looked like at that moment in time. The same sort of thing, think about customer support, right? A customer calls in and says, I was on your website 20 minutes ago and the price said X. And, you know, the support agent looks it up and says, well, I don't know. You know, it says Y now. You don't have the integrity of the information to quickly understand whether or not it actually did say X 10 minutes ago. We just don't know. Or using immutable database concepts like this, just for like batch integration processes. Anyone who's been in IT for a long time has dealt a lot with integrating data and dealt with a scenario that they have maybe integration processes running at midnight and something fails. And they come in the morning and they try and run the integration process again. And all of a sudden it succeeds. There was something bad in the data, but we don't know what it is, but it's fixed now. And the only thing we can do is just wait for it to happen again. It is so difficult to understand what happened at that moment in time. But again, with time travel, you can get the identical provable version of the database that that integration process was using at that moment in time. and see exactly what happened, what caused that error. You also think about race conditions and software code. This is where, you know, you're processing or doing multiple queries across multiple functions, but the data changes in between and all of a sudden something breaks. And because these are so immensely difficult to replicate, we spend so much time as developers trying to isolate these bugs because they're sporadic. We don't know what causes them. They're hard to reproduce, but it's because data's changing underneath it and the integrity isn't there. You know, an immutable database like Flurry with this time travel, you grab a version of the database. You actually hold the database as like a variable you can pass around to your different functions, and they have a guarantee that data will never, ever, ever change underneath that version of the database as you're doing processing work on it. So I could go on, but I think there are so many problems that start to go away when you start to have immutability in your database and you start to have this dimension of time instantly accessible to you.
Yeah, I think immutable databases is sort of like giving me, sort of like getting me excited about some of the possibilities people could have in terms of how to manage their application infrastructure and stuff like that. I think there are so many use cases that are going to come up as the technology matures. Pretty excited about it. Okay, so what is the feedback you're getting, getting from the customers? Are they saying that, we are not looking at blockchain yet, or things like that? Are you getting any kind of pushback for using a technology that's slightly different from what they're used to, and also solves certain use cases that are different from the normal use cases they come across in their organization?
I think the excitement is really fantastic. I mean, the challenge we have is this is brand new technology. So even some of the people using it, in a lot of cases, at large companies, they're using it as a proof of concept or a trial, or they're trying out new mechanisms. And I think it's going to take a little while for people to get comfortable with this technology, really understand how it fits with the other technology they're currently using, and really start to put a lot of this into production workloads. So, you know, we're not in a huge hurry. We realize we're early, and I believe we're, at least with the product, like what we've created, we're the first. We think there will be many others, because to us it just makes sense. You know, we're on a road here towards usage. But I will say that the thing that really excites people is a new way and new capabilities that their applications just get because they chose our database. And because we've inherited blockchain capability kind of at the core of this technology, it allows people who want to start using blockchain technology a really easy on-ramp to do this. They don't necessarily have to go out and, you know, learn how to interact with smart contracts and program them correctly in Solidity and Ethereum, and then figure out what tools they're going to use that are actually integrating data and results from Ethereum network back into their application, and how this stitches, and the fact that sometimes there's uncles and, you know, or forks that happen where they thought a transaction was confirmed and now it's not confirmed. So these are all very difficult concepts that I think only the pioneers are plowing through right now. And with FlurryDB just looking like a regular database, we all know how to use databases, but you're also using blockchain at the same time. It makes, I think, the blockchain technology very accessible to developers in a way they're used to using.
Yeah. So going forward, what are the verticals in which you expect to see large-scale adoption of FlurryDB as the database for their needs?
Yeah, so they're going to come into initially in areas that require high degrees of data integrity or areas where companies are sharing information amongst themselves. So things around supply chain networks, financial information and financial organizations or insurance companies and that sort of category are all going to be a good fit. We also think the public sector has tremendous opportunity. We have a pilot that is starting for a state in India where they're starting to, in parallel, record land record ownership in parallel to their existing systems in FlurryDB is a pilot, is a way to actually get better integrity around their record keeping. So you think about all the public sector record keeping that we're doing, there's great potential there. Healthcare, there's great potential. Ultimately, we see every database being a blockchain database, because in our minds, why wouldn't you want that? It'll be a long road, but we see quite a bit of opportunity.
Do you see any interest from electronic health records companies? Because I think this is a slam dunk use case for electronic health records. So are you seeing any interest there?
Yeah, and there are, as you can imagine, there's a lot of startups looking to use blockchain technology in healthcare. It's really hard to keep track of them. But many of them is they're trying to, you know, develop the technology that delivers on the benefits of what they're looking for. They're having a hard time coming up with the back end that will support that. And so we have a pretty substantial number of healthcare related, most of them around electronic health records, as you mentioned, startups that are trying to disrupt some of what's going on and looking at using FlurryDB as the foundation for their technology stack and their app.
Awesome. So before we wind down, like, where do you think, beyond FlurryDB, where do you think the market will go as blockchain matures and gains trust in the enterprise market? What are the different potential opportunities you see, both for your company as well as for anyone who wants to innovate in this space?
I'm very focused on data and information management, so I'll give my answer in the context of my personal passion in this space, which is we really think the ideas that were initially brought up around the semantic web are the right ideas. They just weren't fully, didn't have everything around them they needed to be hugely successful. So we're all about bringing trust and integrity to any piece of information that you may access. And we see a world like every company currently has a website, that every company starts distributing information, whether it's their product catalog or just their contact info or demographic data, whatever information they want to distribute, that they have the equivalent of not only a public-facing website, but also a public-facing database. And that public-facing database, again, has the trust and integrity that we know it came from them. We know nobody could have manipulated that information. And using some of these new query constructs that we're not only supporting, but helping to pioneer, like Sparkle query interface, you can actually query across multiple databases all across the web simultaneously, bringing back results in a single result set. So I think that's a really cool world where companies can start publishing not just, you know, text on websites, but actually start publishing data from inside their organization that other companies, external apps, whatever it may be, can immediately start to leverage. And the implications of this, I think, are pretty profound. It impacts everything from identity management to, you know, product information distribution to almost you name it. I think it'll be a really cool world, and I believe that'll be the world that we see. I don't know if it's 5 years or 10 years, but I think that's where we're headed.
Yeah, I think I completely agree with you. Like, that's the kind of world where we are definitely headed. So one last question. What is your time frame, like, or what is your aspiration for blockchain to be the underlying network for all our interactions, all our transactions, everything? Like, when will blockchain become the internet of everything? What is your aspiration?
I don't know. I've been around the block, I think, enough times now that I'll decline to answer that question. There's always technologies that I think will take a while that just surprise me. It's like, you know, in 6-9 months, the entire landscape shifts. And then things I think that will be prevalent in 6 to 9 months end up taking years. So it's hard to tell. I mean, lots of times there's events that are outside of our control that end up, you know, driving a stake in some of these technologies. I don't mean that in a negative way, in a positive way, like give them the final kind of kick that they need to become pervasive. So sometimes we don't even have control over it. Sometimes it's some external event that really precipitates that control, maybe a massive data breach or, you know, some event that happens. So I don't know, you know, I think that we'll be using blockchain tens, if not hundreds of times a day, unbeknownst to us, whether it's facilitating every payment or other activities that we're doing. I think we'll end up using it in some regard in 5 to 10 years, that many times a day without knowing it. Kind of how we're using the internet all the time today and we don't really know.
Yeah, or using artificial intelligence while using Gmail or one of these services.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree with you. So if people have to contact you, can you talk about this, your social network coordinates and also the website of FloridaDB?
Yeah, so our website is at, it's a very short name, it's Flurry, FLUR.EE. Or flurry.com, I think will also redirect you. So that's how you get to us on our website. And we have most of our links from there, but our Twitter handle is FlurryPBC. My Twitter handle is bplats. And yeah, we've got blogs and other things that people can find.
Awesome. Thanks, Brian. It was a great conversation. And hopefully we'll come back and talk about more in a different setting, like a virtual panel or something in the future. It was great talking to you. And good luck with what you're doing with FloridaDB. And I'm going to keep a close watch on how you guys are doing. And I'll get back to you and talk to you when something interesting comes up.
Great. Thanks so much for having me, Krish. It was a pleasure being here.
Thanks to StackSense.io sponsor Swim.ai. Swim is real-time edge intelligence software. Swim enables intelligent data transformation at the edge by reducing, analyzing and learning from fast data locally on edge devices. Thanks to other sponsors of StackSense.io for their continued support. Thanks to Cloud Fabrics and CoreStack for their support. You can learn more about Cloud Fabrics at www.cloudfabrics.com and CoreStack at www.corestack.io.